I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I am Misha Globerman, and I am the host both of the podcast and of the Trampoline Hall live show that takes place in Toronto. The show takes place in Toronto, usually in a bar, the Garrison. Sometimes we go to other cities, but that's usually where we are. The way the show works is someone gets up on stage, they give a lecture, and then we take questions after. But the thing about the lecture is this: they may not speak on subjects about which they are professionally expert. It cannot be their job to know the thing. That's how it goes. Here on the podcast, what we do is we go through our vast archives and we pull out one lecture with the Q&A and we zap it to you directly into your brain. By the way, if you like it and you're in Toronto, you should come check out the live show. It's a great show. If you want to find out when it is, you can go to our website, get on our mailing list, and we will let you know when the shows happen. But that is the distant future. Let us talk now of now, right now, which is what we're about to do, is get on to this episode's lecture. And let me introduce that to you. The topic is hunting, and the lecturer is Jessica Edwards.
Hi. Okay. Okay. I'm very bad at this, so you'll have to tell me about the microphone thing. In the United States, in the Catskills, which is in upstate New York, there is a ritual that happens around American Thanksgiving. The folks in the country, they get out their rifles of regulated gauges, their bows and their arrows, and don fashion-forward outfits, mainly of leaf patterns and electric orange, and hit the woods. Deer hunting has begun. There are many rules and regulations to hunting upstate, or downstate if you're in Canada. Antler size, whether you are shooting buck or doe, location, season restrictions, and of course, age considerations. So one of the rules is that a hunter under the age of 17 may still take a buck with at least one antler that is 3 inches long, which is according to the 2006 muzzle-loading gun deer season policies. It gives the young people something to aim for, so to speak. But what is it about the ritual of the predator and the prey that people find so appealing even after Michael Moore has made it so unfashionable? And why is it that the etymology of hunting crops up in so many activities that don't involve tying a carcass to the roof of your car? The activities, they're all really different, but there's one fundamental commonality: pursuit, which in America, anyway, is a constitutional right. So let's consider the most famous hunter of all. Orion. If you don't know, Orion is that guy in the sky with the two dogs. He has a belt of 3 stars lined up that are the easiest constellation to spot in the winter sky. One could argue that he started this whole hunting fashion thing with his fancy shiny belt. But to make a long story short, Orion was the greatest hunter in all of the land, but also kind of a show-off. And the Mother Earth and all of the other gods up in Greek myth heaven heard that he had been talking shit about how he could kill all the wild animals in the whole world. So this really pissed them off, obviously, being the creator of all of those. So they sent a scorpion after him, which inevitably killed him. Whoa, shaking hands much? Okay. But Orion was a great hunter of beasts and of women. And Artemis, who was a huntress herself, and an admirer of Orion, implored the gods to place her love up in the sky so she could gaze upon him forever. They agreed, as long as they placed the scorpion there to warn against such nasty crimes as ego. But the great hunter Orion was fearful that the scorpion would attack him in the heavens and beg that they be placed further apart from each other. So this is why the scorpion is a spring constellation and Orion a winter, and the hunter becomes the hunted. 3 hours south of the Catskills, in New York City proper, a whole other type of hunting goes on in the concrete jungle. Man hunting. The rituals... Awesome. Okay. I feel better now. Okay, the rituals of dating in New York City have many rules and guidelines, seasons and outfits, just as many as its upstate counterpart. And the trophies are just as cumbersome. Most of the women in New York date exclusively online, and their rifles and bullets are techno winks and flirtatious emails. Gone are the days when you could meet someone drunk in a bar and wake up hangover hoping that you'd written their phone number down properly. In New York City, manhunting is also a contact sport, and according to regulations, which I'm sure are similar up here, if you meet a man on Friday, you're not allowed to call him until Tuesday, and your first couple of dates shouldn't be during prime weekend time. It parallels the bait and wait strategy used for big game hunting like Alaskan grizzly bear. With online dating, it's more than likely that you'll be stalking several prey at once, always with the baiting, the line, and the casting, a continuous cycle of action and reaction in pursuit of a larger goal. In this case, men or women, but these men or women could be anything. The fundamental principle of search and capture are basic elements in human nature. Like the act of hunting and gathering did for the tribes that came before us, this cycle forms the social fabric of which we are all a part. My hands aren't working right now. Sorry, guys. Okay, allow me to introduce a theory. So this is a theory. It's called hunting. It's the theory of hunting. And it will open up the consideration of search, capture, and pursuit. Now, it's a little bit high-minded and deep-brained, but it's a theory, and they're supposed to do that. So basically, theoretical hunting is a self-exciting oscillation of a system and is common in systems which incorporate feedback. It's an important phenomenon in many fields, including engineering, economics, and biology. Okay, so keywords, self-exciting. Self-exciting oscillation. The straight mathy definition of this is that self-exciting oscillations are logical consequences of systems which are described by a closed loop of time-lagged differential equations. Okay, what? Okay. I have no idea. I don't know anything about math. I'm not a math person. But what I take this to be is that variable A influences something in variable B, which in turn drives a change in variable C, etc., and so on. So feedback, which basically refers to the fact that the system is closed and then the output returns to the input. So the theory of hunting, basically for the rest of us who don't know anything about math, is that hunting is action and reaction completed in a closed system that incorporates time delay. Fine. But that's basically how we communicate with each other as humans. You say something, I respond, we repeat, hopefully we repeat again, and there's a timely manner. Visually, I would say it looks like infinity, like the figure eight. So, applying hunting theory to hunting, in game hunting, the action and reaction is the predator and the prey in a closed system of stalking and running. There is a time delay involving patience and marksmanship that will allow for the predator to capture his prey. And although the specific act itself has a final ending, whether that be venison for dinner or Kentucky Fried Chicken, the ritual of hunting itself incorporates feedback. Remember Orion? His output returned to bite him in the ass, or stung him with the scorpion's tail, as the case may be. There is another type of hunting that uses enticement and incentive to lure its prey rather than bullets and arrows. Headhunting in corporate culture is incredibly pervasive, and the position is often internal in the HR department of a large company. These folks are more likely referred to as recruiters rather than headhunters, because headhunting specifically suggests a whole other level of specialization and an intimate knowledge of the person that they are hunting, as well as the position they're trying to fill. And they're relentless. They're like sly foxes and sleazy private investigators all wrapped up into one, tempting the potential employee with benefits and remuneration. And there is a certain quality to high-level headhunting that is similar to the thrill of walking through the woods following your prey. The lure of the trophy, in this case, commission. In its own way, the pre-colonial headhunting that was practiced in Nigeria and Borneo and the Amazon basin and many other places had its own lure of a type of commission. Remember the guys with the heads and the sticks and the shrunken heads and that in that anthropology textbook from first year university, those guys. So the debate among scholars as to what the purpose was for them was commonly believed to be a ceremonial practice that defended hierarchies, cemented social structures within the tribes of where it was practiced. Some academics consider it to be an important display of manhood and prestige. Sound familiar? You put those guys in a three-piece suit, and it's like Wall Street, Bay Street, same thing. There is another component to all the ceremonial bragging and showing off, and of course, this is the shopping, the bargain hunting. So back in the States, they have a relatively interesting document called the Declaration of Independence. I'm sure you've heard of it. And there's this one line, and it always sort of makes me laugh because it basically outlines the paradox that is the U.S. It's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But it's a little known fact that happiness actually used to be property. So life, liberty, and the pursuit of property, which is a whole different thing. Capitalism should have been incorporated directly into the country. And just as an aside, in Canada, there's a similar saying, and it's peace, order, and good government, which I actually believe emphasizes the very difference between Americans and Canadians, and that's that they're basically the same, except that they're not. So we were talking about, shopping, right? Okay, tangent. So my grandmother is American. She lives in Northeast Philadelphia, and her and my grandfather are blue-collar retirees. They live comfortably, have health insurance, and a nice, spacious apartment, and they usually go to the diner for the early bird special. And they aren't rich, but they aren't poor, but she loves to clip coupons. This woman, any weekend I go to visit on Sunday morning, without fail, is sitting with the Philadelphia Inquirer, all the news sections on the floor, and she's looking through the circulars, as she calls them. They're on her lap. Buy two jars of fat-free Hellman's mayonnaise and get the third for half off. You can, like, see the excitement in her face. She's, like, totally dying. And basically, why would anyone need that much mayonnaise? Like, who? These people are, like, they have high cholesterol and they eat out half the time, so what's the point? But for her, it's a bargain. So we get in the car and we go to the ShopRite and I help her carry three jars of mayonnaise back into the car and up the stairs. And she puts it in the pantry and it'll sit there for 3 years. But you know what? She doesn't care. She found a bargain. And it was in the pursuit of the almighty deal and she won. So she acquired the mayo and it will sit there in the closet displayed like a trophy, her proverbial antlers on the wall. So I, too, am a stalker of bargains. Anyone who knows me knows that I love the thrift stores. Even finding the good thrift stores in the various towns and cities that I visit is a form of hunting, because there's nothing like a really good one. But the true achievement is walking out with three bags full of clothing for $50, and then, of course, the bragging rights and tall tales associated with hunting that come into play. For example, so I went out to lunch last week or something, and I put on my jacket at the end of the meal, and my work colleague said, "Oh my God, that jacket is gorgeous. Is that Marc Jacobs?" I'm like, "No, I got it at a thrift store for $8. I had actually paid $18, but they didn't really need to know that, right? So the tales of hunting aren't only reserved for the size of the catch. These rituals are deeply ingrained in the structure and form of the act, no matter what we are in pursuit of. So back in game hunting land, there's this built-in fraternity that's ingrained in going out on the hunt. In the Catskills, where my family has a house, we pass numerous hunting lodges on the way up the 2-mile road to our property. These ones are mostly ramshackle, where grown men and boys alike sleep in bunk beds, and there is inevitably a family of mice who call the place home as well. But there is a whole huge industry behind hunting, where men take their sons, and hopefully some of their daughters, and pay thousands of dollars to go deep into Saskatchewan to shoot moose, or to the Dakotas to shoot turkey or buffalo. Did you guys know that turkey is actually big game hunting? Like turkey, anyway, whatever. I thought that was really cool. I'm like, what? Anyway, there's a whole commerce built around this sense of brotherhood that strengthens that bond by stalking and hopefully killing another living thing. Then there's all the post-hunting rituals, like the archiving and the skinning and the cooking and the drinking, all designed to manufacture this sense of camaraderie. So in the end, is that what hunting is all about? That's the reason that we go off alone or in packs in pursuit of a common goal? I guess for all the environmental, social, cultural debates that come up in the contemporary sport of game hunting, there's one common argument missing. Hunting, in any of its forms, provides us with an inherent interpersonal connection that we are all looking for.
Jessica Edwards, ladies and gentlemen.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Are there any questions? Yes, you near the back.
Do you hunt?
It's a great question. Thank you.
No. I would like to hunt, but I would like to purchase a gun, but I'm not to use here. I'm not actually allowed to buy a gun right now because I wanted to start off with something small like a BB gun, but my grandfather got his eye shot out when he was like 7, and so he won't let me. So I'm not a hunter.
Your grandfather is in charge of this in the state that you live in?
Yeah, kind
of. Or is he just like, can you actually, is that right? You can't because your grandfather won't let you?
It's like a guilt thing.
Wow.
I'm a Jew, what do you want?
Wow. Wait, do you know Jews who hunt?
No. No.
You would be the first.
They hunt for bargains.
That's true.
Something.
So wait, how was your Jewish grandfather near a hunting? Or was he shot in a different situation?
It was like on the street, you know? Like, the Christmas story when they go out and they're like, I want a gun for Hanukkah or whatever. And then inevitably one of the bad kids get one.
So like a passing Gentile was having a heartwarming moment and your grandfather got shot in the eye?
Basically, yeah. Okay. Basically.
All right.
That's generally what happened.
Wow. But do you really want to hunt? Are you like, is it something that you aspire to?
I would like to hunt cans to start out with. This whole like killing another living thing is a little bit weird, but I wouldn't mind shooting some, like I wouldn't mind the act of shooting a gun, but I don't know that I could.
But not the part where the bullet hits the other thing. That's where the story's the interesting part is over for you.
Exactly.
Okay. So like riflery.
Yeah, like archery or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else you would like to know? There are so many different kinds of hunting you can ask about that I know. It's like, yes, you sir.
Is your metaphor for hunting a positive thing or a negative thing in your life?
Which one? You're asking if the metaphor is a positive or negative thing. You mean the
yeah, in general, like your idea of hunting, whether it be for men or clothing.
Oh, so do you think just hunting is good?
I think the act of pursuing something is good. So what I took hunting to be in that act, yes, I think it's a positive thing to pursue something.
What about killing it when you get it?
Yeah.
In all the different, in each of the different realms, we'll run through them.
No comment? I don't know.
Okay. Anything else people would like to know? Yes, yes, you ma'am.
What do you think makes someone a good hunter?
Excellent question. What makes a good hunter?
I think probably patience and diligence would probably be those part of that. You know, it depends. I guess it depends what you're hunting. And, you know, if you're standing in the woods in the freezing cold waiting for a deer, then patience and probably beer is a good thing. But other than, like, that's probably it. I think it depends on what you're looking for. But it seems that when you are in pursuit of something, you must wait for it to capture. So
there you go. Patience. Patience is the biggie. Anything else people would like to know? Yes, yes, you, sir.
Does patience work for man?
Can you say that again, please?
It is patience important in man. Could you say that in your answer?
Yes, patience is important in man hunting. God damn it.
Were you like, if I put this word in, no one's going to hear the rest of the whole lecture? Were you worried about that?
No, that's what I wanted.
All right. Well, it's worked out for you. You have captured them with the word that you put out. So how does that work? How does that work in man? Even I'm sick. In man hunting. How does patience apply itself in that sort of situation?
Sounds like we're talking about sheep, like man hunting.
I thought that was the sort of implicit subtext. I don't know. How does patience apply to man hunting? Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we could talk about the theoretical elements of hunting in this particular section as well, because it's about, you know, an action and a reaction. It's an exchange within a time-honored, you know, system. So that, you know, little back and forth.
Right.
To get some man hunting, you know.
Right.
Give a little, you get a little.
Well, no, I don't know what you mean. So is this like the dating, when you were talking about like the date, like the calling on, get the number on Thursday and call on?
Yeah.
Like is that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I guess. So this is going terribly. We're having a terrible time.
Are you having a terrible time? Yeah. We could change things. We could change it. You could ask them questions,
okay,
or we could talk about something else. It's, you know, it's up to you. any questions just any questions, really?
Nobody, really?
No, they're out there. They're out there. Just the shy people. There we go. Yes, you. Yes.
Do you think that if you were a successful man hunter, that you could go into the woods and be a successful animal hunter?
Excellent question. Transferability of skills specifically from man hunting to animal hunting.
I think that you would be a better man hunter if you were a good bargain hunter, but I don't know that man hunting necessarily transfers that to game hunting.
Of course I have to ask you why. Like, what are the bargain hunting skills that you feel apply in man hunting?
It's all in the outfit. Okay.
Do you think that like a good man hunter is good at like spotting, like be like, oh, like that guy might look a little crappy, but if we gave him a different haircut, that kind of thing, he'd be.
I have a cashmere sweater from 1956 in the trunk that'll look awesome on that guy.
So we can actually combine the activities, mm-hmm. literally. All right. Okay. Good. Yes. Anything else? Yes. You ma'am. What is turkey hunting like? Excellent question.
You know, I don't know, because I've never hunted a turkey, but I saw some pictures when I was researching this, and I didn't realize that turkeys are gigantic animals. They're, like, very large, like, come up to the thigh of a grown man, and they have these huge tails. Like, the plumage is outrageous. It's pretty amazing. But I've never hunted, so I don't know what it looks like but they look really cool.
Do you think it makes it harder to hit them that they have so much extreme, that you just keep hitting the plumage?
Yeah.
And you're like, damn.
Yeah.
And in fact, the turkey is just like, you know, this little tiny piece of meat
exactly.
in the middle.
The meat's nothing.
Hiding in all of this plumage. Okay. I've never been hunting either.
But I'm guessing.
Me too.
I think there was someone who had a question up there. Is that right?
I retracted my question.
All right. Okay. Yes, for Steve Cato in the booth.
Have you ever tried out, like, Big Buck Hunter, like the video game that they have in some bars in New York even? Like, have you tried that out?
I love that game.
So it's like you have been hunting, sort of. Like,
I guess. But I also...
How far did you get to Maine?
I don't get that far, no. Mm-mm.
So how far, like, talk about it?
Well... Well, I mean, it's possible that I wouldn't remember necessarily how I scored on it because of the location in which the game happened to be played in, and the, you know, I mean, it was in a bar, come on. But there's always a delay on those, so it takes you, like, $5 or $6 to actually realize that your rifle's off, and so you have to fix it to, you know, you have to fix your aim correct, as it were, for the game, which always really made me mad, so I'd go to pinball.
Right. But I thought that just simulated wind conditions.
Maybe. Right. Maybe.
So it's a hard game. But I like that you contend that she actually has been hunting by virtue of having played that game.
Well, you can also shoot turkeys in that game, too, right? Like, mm-hmm. You can actually, like, go for turkeys, so it's like something like shooting turkeys.
I guess. It's like the hunting equivalent of online dating.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, you ma'am, yes.
Satisfaction of winning, getting a high score duck hunt compares to turkey hunting in real life.
So the comparison between a high score specifically in the game Duck Hunt,
that Nintendo
versus
game, right?
Hunting specifically for turkey, specifically in real life.
Yeah.
Okay, that's an excellent question. What game is Duck Hunt? Do you know?
I know Duck Hunt. I'm very familiar. Again, with the duck hunting, it was something that was secondary after Super Mario, so it was like when you got bored of playing Super Mario, you put the duck hunting in. Although it was pretty satisfactory, I would think that shooting at the plumage would probably take over because the graphics on that duck hunting are horrifying now. But that's my answer.
Are there other hunting simulations that you've been involved in, apart from Buck Hunt and Duck Hunt?
No, that was a buck and duck, yeah.
Is that what it was? Is that what it was called?
Yeah, buck hunt, right, yeah. Right.
Had you have other, like, have you ever played a hunting-based board game or fantasy role-playing game?
No.
Okay. Or other video games?
I'm more of a pinball person.
Okay. No, I'm curious at how serious your hunting plan is. Like, if you've been, like sort of training for it, or if you have an actual intention...
This whole BB gun thing is really throwing me off because that was what I assumed would be like my first step into that world. Because, I mean, to be honest, I really don't think I could ever shoot something. It's a little bit, I mean, that's a little crazy to be like, I killed that. Now that I have to research other elements in which I can shoot a gun, and there's the firing ranges and stuff, but there's something called an air gun where it doesn't have bullets. It just simulates the idea of holding something and aiming. So I might try that first.
What do you mean?
It just makes a loud noise.
Cool. Oh, okay. Are there any hunters who have questions?
Yeah.
Is there anyone who's been
any
hunting?
Any huntings?
With?
People?
Or non-hunters.
Shooting flying objects considered to be the most difficult aspect of hunting, or is there other big game better?
Is shooting flying objects harder than shooting non-flying objects?
From what I understand, that is the hardest. Tall grass and small animals is also very difficult.
So like the mouse hunter. No. The chipmunk hunter is revered among the hunters.
Well, it's the grouse hunter that's pretty revered.
Is the grouse tiny?
I don't actually know what they look like. They're apparent. I don't know either. But anyway, and then also there's something called bear baiting, which happens in Alaska that is apparently very difficult and is very controversial.
What is it? It sounds foolish.
they set up these traps in the woods, basically, but they're bait traps. So you stand around this hut that a bear is supposed to come and walk over and eat from, but it's a lot of waiting. So
So you set up a hut and the bear's supposed to go in and then you shoot him? Is that the...
Yeah, but you're only allowed to shoot him in certain areas and like on his body. There's a lot of rules.
You only really, you have to yeah. like, if you shoot him in the wrong place in his body, you get in trouble?
Something like that, yeah. You get fined or something and like it can only be, I don't know a ton about this, but there's something to do with fur color. That if it's a certain type of brown, you're not allowed to shoot it because it means that it's younger. And if it has a cub with it, you're not allowed to shoot it because it's probably a mom. And
wow.
Again, I'm not an expert, but
it seems like the skill of like standing fairly close to a large bear and then being able to remember those complicated rules in that situation seems like it's a big skill. Sorry, do they have refs? Is the question?
The bears judge themselves.
They do. They sit around, they chat about it, they come up with an answer.
You, sir, you in the corner, yes.
You mentioned patience. While manhunting, when did you metaphorically pull the trigger?
Ooh, good question. Well, that's when you call on Tuesday. And then I think that the rule is, according to my sources, after 3 dates, that's when you get to pull the trigger, according to the... manhunting rule
and metaphorically, book. We're talking. Are we talking about the sex trigger? Is that the one that we're pulling? Okay. So it's Tuesday, 3 dates.
3 dates.
And then it's killing time. So many people. Yes, you, sir.
Game hunting requires a license, and there's a lot of sort of rules and regulations surrounding it. Do you think that licensing and rules and regulations should be applied to other forms of hunting?
Excellent question. So should bargain hunting, for instance, or manhunting be licensed?
Well, there are rules and regulations to most of that other stuff. So I pointed out some of the manhunting rules and regulations. But bargain hunting, I mean, y'all have Boxing Day. That's like a rule for bargain hunting. You know that there's one day in the entire year that you get to go, and it's definitely going to be 75% off. That's a handbook basically for shopping. Is that a good answer to answer your question? Do you need more? No.
You can answer honestly. Are you sat?
No. If we can keep going. Okay.
I'm happy with
He's
it.
He's satisfied.
All right. I'm gonna go to. I don't normally go to the same person twice. We had Steve Cato before, but now Senor Stefano Cado has a question from the sound booth.
About bear baiting is cowardly. That's in Maine, for example, there's constantly a bill to ban bear baiting. It doesn't just happen in Alaska, it happens in other northern American states. And
is this a question?
No, I'm just telling you he's wrong.
Steve is actually physically above the law for all of these things. That's why he's higher up, so it's okay.
But bear baiting is where people like put a bunch of donuts out on the stump of a tree every day for a week and make sure that a bear, they don't even sit around and watch, they like take off and just come back and monitor whether a bear has been by. They're like, oh, a bear has been here to eat these donuts. And they're donuts, too. They use donuts.
And then what? Then they just have a little laugh at the bear's expense?
They use the donuts out there for like 7 days. Like they come every day, put some donuts out there, make sure that a bear is visiting the donuts. And then on the seventh day, they sit there, put the donuts up, hide in the blind, and shoot the bear.
It's weird that it's on the same schedule as manhunting. You don't go in right away.
It's a really cruddy way of hunting a dangerous animal in a way, I would say. And then, but beyond that as well, though, like the rules about the coat and where you can shoot the bear just apply to bears in general. So if you were actually like, you know, following a bear in the wild, tracking it, endangering your life, not leaving donuts around, the same rules would apply to you. Only you're just like chilling out with some bros in a cabin, you know, cracking some brews and then checking on the donuts every so often.
That sounds like all types of game hunting, though.
Some of it's actually more involved. Like, Ted Nugent's really into it. He's really passionate. He's related really deep stories about game hunting.
I take your criticism, I guess. I guess it's criticism, right? Okay, so I agree with you. I think that there is a cowardliness, but I think that if you wanted to get sticky about it, that there's probably a cowardliness to all types of hunting because you're a human with a gun. You know? You got a brain, you got thumbs. You got thumbs, man. Like, right? So, I mean, all types of hunting, you could argue, is kind of cowardly. And so, I mean, I agree that that whole baiting thing is a little bit weird, and especially when people don't actually observe the areas under which they're supposed to hunt. And there are very specific regulations. Like, if you Google New York State hunting, it comes up with like 80 squadrons, and it's only during this period of time, and you can only use this kind of gauge and all the rest of it. And so it's really hard to regulate that, because half of that space is private property. You know, like, if I come to catch a hunter on my property, it's gonna be trouble. That's why I want a gun, to shoot the hunters. No, I'm just kidding. I won't shoot the hunters. The hunters are hunted? Okay.
That was a sort of unconvincing, just kidding. Yeah. Suddenly the whole lecture's like taking this different like turn. I'll go all the way in the, okay, yes, you near the bar.
To me, you're referring to the redundancy of this primitive instinct that we have of hunting. I just wondered if there's anything that we can actually, apart from shopping for bargains, is there any way we can actually constructively use this instinct that's now totally useless in our society?
Do you mean like specifically the killing part? Because the rest, I mean, the whole lecture, I think, was about its usefulness.
Again, I think it comes back to the idea of pursuing something. So, I mean, I think that if you pursue something, you don't have to. I mean, it could be anything. That's a little bit my argument. Like, if you're pursuing a job or, you know, whatever, going to school or whatever it is, it's the act of really gunning for that and going for it because it's really important to you. I guess that's really a positive thing. I don't think that's redundant if you don't repeat it forever. You know, hopefully you'll pursue something, you'll get it, and then you'll move on and pursue something else, right? Does that answer your question at all? No?
I think it does for me.
Okay.
Sure, I'm okay, I guess, you.
Do you think it would be the same satisfaction if instead of using a real gun, they use paintball guns?
Ooh. In game hunting? If they use paintball guns in game hunting?
Totally.
Would there be the same satisfaction is the question.
That's like yes. Because you know what? You'd have like performance art after. It'd be like all these animals running through the entire world with like green and blue and purple. Be like, that guy got nailed like 3 times. He must be really slow.
Maybe we'll end on that image.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jessica Edwards, ladies and gentlemen. Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecturer was chosen by Erica Capito. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Our coordinating producer is Kate Bars. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. If you enjoyed the podcast, you can really help us out by leaving a rating and review on iTunes. It helps a lot. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.